Hi, my name is Noel Bell, and today I'm chatting to Robert Wagner, author of Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self. The interview took place at the Gateway to the Mind conference in London in November 2012, organized by Archetype Events. I started by asking Robert how he came to write his hugely influential book.
Yeah, so my book, Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self, in some regards has to do with a lucid dream I had. Years earlier, I had tried to write a book on lucid dreaming, but just couldn't do it. I got 40 or 50 pages in, and I was totally blocked because it's such a huge subject, and I knew so much about it. So 3 years later, I became aware one time in a dream. I found myself in a Louisiana farmhouse, and I thought, I don't live here, and I realized, oh, this must be a dream. In that dream, there was a woman behind me, and I knew that oftentimes the shadow aspect is behind us. And I turned behind me, and there was a lovely black woman smiling at me. I picked her up, and I put her right in front of me, and I said, "Who are you? Who are you?" She looked at me, dead in the eye, and said, "I am a discarded aspect of yourself." So, lucidly aware, I had to think, how do you respond to a discarded aspect? And I totally opened up with love and compassion and accepted her, whereupon she all of a sudden began to shrink down to wisp of colored light that entered my torso and made me wake up. When I woke up, I realized I was different somehow. And a week later, I realized that every day that week, I thought about, I should try to write a book on lucid dreaming again. And so it was like I had reintegrated with that discarded energy, and now I felt like I could actually do it, that I could actually write a book on lucid dreaming. And so I carved out some time, and I sat down, and eventually I began to write.
And how has it changed, or has it changed your life, the actual book?
You know, it has. It was interesting writing it. At a certain point, I realized I was running out of time, and I had so many thoughts in my mind that I kind of became word blind, just like an Eskimo becomes snow blind. I just began to write without thinking so much, and I felt in many regards guided as I was writing the book. And so I was quite shocked at the end of it that I actually had accomplished it and that it's been so well received. It's changed me in as much as interacting with so many people from around the world, hearing about their experiences, especially the experienced lucid dreamers, to hear them echo many of my comments and thank me for giving words to experiences that they'd never had the chance to verbalize. That's been just extraordinarily rewarding. It was interesting, after the book came, as the book was getting ready to come out, I began to have a series of gifting dreams. And I think all these gifting dreams of people known and unknown giving me gifts and thousands of gifts were all these future thanks and future connections that I was to make with all these people who had read my book.
In your excellent talk earlier, you mentioned that lucid dreaming can be a treatment for PTSD.
Right. Some psychotherapists realize that the aspect of recurring nightmares within PTSD, that lucid dreaming might assist with ending the recurring nightmares. And normally what they find is when they teach their clients how to become consciously aware in their nightmare experience, that normally one lucid dream, one time of becoming consciously aware and facing the nightmare figure, will radically reduce the amount of recurring nightmares they have. And sometimes altogether, sometimes they never have that nightmare ever again. So I think just having that moment of awareness in the subconscious, facing the fear, and realizing its illusory quality is transformative for many of these people, and they regain their normal sleep life. Now, it's not to say they don't get over all the other aspects of PTSD, mm-hmm. but it is to say that they regain their sleep life, which for many of them is very important towards furthering their healing.
Now, you mentioned counseling and psychotherapy, and invariably, like in America, like in Western Europe, common presenting issues are anxiety,
right,
and depression. So right. For anxiety, you mentioned in your talk of saying to a dream, "Hey, I want to be free of anxiety for a week." Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, so a young woman who's a wonderful lucid dreamer asked me if I thought anxiety could be resolved in a lucid dream by using lucid dreaming. So I suggest to her, the next time she became lucidly aware, just ignore the dream figures, ignore the setting, and just shout out to the awareness behind the dream, her subliminal self, or her inner self, if you will. Hey, I want to be free of anxiety for 1 week. And she told me when she woke up that after doing this in a lucid dream, she woke up and she felt like a different person. She said it was like she remembered what it was like to be a little girl when she had no anxiety. And for her, that was an incredible experience. And so she repeated this week after week and finally had her normal quarterly or biannual meeting with her psychiatrist. And the psychiatrist immediately said, "What's happened to you? You don't have any anxiety anymore." He could immediately just see in her way. And he told her, she mentioned that she was doing this in lucid dreaming, and he didn't know what lucid dreaming was and was quite shocked to think that a person could actually do this.
One question I'd have for you, invariably any treatment model like in the States or in Western Europe, we're looking for, or at least governments,
right,
and on an organizational setting are looking for the evidence base.
Right, right. So lucid dreaming as a therapeutic use, there's probably been 7-8 papers on it, and most of those papers, I think all of the papers, are about using lucid dreaming to combat recurring nightmares for PTSD. What I'm trying to bring out is, theoretically, if you can end recurring nightmares from a lucid dream state, why can't you, consciously aware in the subconscious mind, why can't you also begin to heal on an emotional level anxiety, phobias, obsessive compulsive disorder, all these things? Because to the mind, the mental experience of it is so powerful when it occurs in the lucid dream state. Oftentimes the Buddhists say that an action performed in the lucid dream state is 9 times more powerful than one performed at the level of waking, just because you're already at this deep level of awareness. You're right. We need evidence if this is ever going to make it into mainstream therapeutic techniques. But for my part, I'm just getting the idea out there.
Sure.
and finding other lucid dreamers who have had these experiences and have been benefited by them.
Just want to touch briefly on the issue of stigma. We just heard an excellent talk from Michael Katz. Now, he mentioned that his base, if you like, in presidential voting terms would be a conference like this. Is that the same? So is there any difference between, I mean, the openness of Americans towards therapy has been way more advanced than Europeans, I would have thought. You know, Americans are, yes, I have a therapist, and they're all very
right.
open about it. What about lucid dreams? I mean, is it that you're seen as freaks over there
well,
as you can be here?
So I think throughout the Western culture, dreams over time have been devalued. Of course, Freud and Jung, mm-hmm. In their heyday, had kind of reemphasized the importance of dreams as the royal road to the unconscious, and also as a gateway of understanding the psyche, the levels of psychical awareness, the nature of complexes and various things. So on one level, the only one who values dreams anymore is basically the psychological and therapeutic community to a large degree, to a vast degree. And so part of all of this and getting lucid dreaming integrated more into normal society is kind of dealing with this new group of people who have become aware of it. Now that for 30 years it's been scientifically validated, when they do research of college students and ask them, have you ever become consciously aware in a dream, the International Journal of Dream Research reports that basically about 70% of college students around the world report at least one time they've become consciously aware within a dream. And then when they ask if you've become consciously aware within a dream at least once a month, you know, then it drops down quite a bit to I think it was 14% mm-hmm. of that sample. But if this practice is becoming better and better known in the world now, it just requires people to take the practice into a scientific setting, into a therapeutic usage, and begin to get people to work with it, because the early results or the anecdotes are very, very promising.
Now, we had a bite to eat, some... Right. I forced you down, long walking down Exhibition Road. We caught a bit of bite to eat in a Chinese. I was briefly mentioning a dream I had of suffocation.
Right.
And I found it incredibly therapeutic. But my question would be, should any interpretation of dreams be within the confines of a therapeutic relationship, an established contractual relationship?
You know, ethically, some people would say yes, that ideally that would be the case and all. You know, for myself, I'm a past president of the International Association for the Study of Dreams. And whenever I work on a dream, within our organization, we've just basically agreed that each person's symbols are uniquely their own, and each person's dream is theirs. Mm-hmm. And so even when I interact with someone on a dream, I never say, your dream means this, because that'd be all projection on my part. But what I do instead is ask questions. I ask, so if I was from another planet, what would that symbol mean? And when I listen to the person's response, you know, then I'll go on with more questions. So you'll never hear me tell somebody what their dream means. Instead, you'll hear me ask numerous questions to the person until normally they have an aha experience.
You're listening to an interview with Robert Wagoner with me, Noel Bell, which took place at the Gateway to the Mind conference in London in November 2012, sponsored by Archetype Events. Now, you also mentioned in your talk Jung's sense of self and Ernest Hilgard. So, levels of self. I mean, how does the inner self help us to educate ourselves into more awareness?
Right. So in my book, I bring up the idea that we have an inner self. And Ernest Hilgard, who was the former head of the American Psychological Association and a professor at Stanford, he found in his work with patients in deep hypnosis that they had what they call a hidden observer. And Carl Jung, of course, brought up the idea of the self with a capital S, you know, kind of more aware. But why I'm saying that in lucid dreaming, what I discovered is that you can become consciously aware in the dream, ignore all the dream figures, ignore the dream setting, and just shout out questions to an invisible awareness behind the dream. And incredibly, it will respond, especially if you're an experienced lucid dreamer who's worked through most of your issues and achieved some point of mental clarity. Normally, it'll respond, and sometimes the responses are utterly profound. Sometimes the responses refute your request and provide an alternative explanation. So I think that lucid dreaming is giving us evidence that an inner self exists. Now, the value to that, to the ego or waking self, is when you realize that you're part of a larger psychical awareness, then you lose much of your feelings of anxiety. The ego doesn't have to control everything. There's a larger awareness of which it's a part. So it can go along with a feeling of spaciousness, of kind of gracefulness, of kind of inner trust that most egos do not have. And the reason it has it is because it recognizes it's beginning to integrate a little bit more with this unconscious awareness, which is actually very conscious, this inner self-awareness.
I was also intrigued with some of the techniques you talked about, particularly the counting technique.
Right. Someone asked, is it possible to go from the waking state directly into a lucid dream? And that's what we call a wake-initiated lucid dream. I'd recommend someone do this when they're naturally feeling drowsy at 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. But basically, you'd lay down, and as you allow yourself to go to sleep, you're counting: 1, this is a dream; 2, this is a dream; 3, this is a dream. And you might find yourself suddenly saying 19, this is a dream, and realizing around you It is a skyscraper and a windmill and all sorts of strange things.
In your imagination?
Well, in your hypnagogia or whatever, right. But you've actually entered a dreamlike state and you find yourself still counting and then the awareness comes to you. Oh my God, here I am in a dream. So that's how you would move from waking consciousness into a lucid dream directly.
And when you talked about how lucid dreams end, you talked about the initial waking up in bed, but you also talked about false awakening right. and then a void state.
Right, yeah.
If my notes are accurate.
You've got it exactly right. So most people, when they decide to wake up from a lucid dream, they immediately awaken in bed and they'll write down the lucid dream. But sometimes you'll have the experience that we call a false awakening. You'll tell yourself to wake up. You'll wake up, you'll roll over in bed, and you'll look down at the carpet, and now you have a pink carpet. And you think, wait a second, we don't have a pink carpet. And then you realize, oh, I'm still dreaming. And boom, you'll normally wake up at that point. The third way of waking up is a curious one. And so the lucid dream is coming to an end. You're ready to wake up when suddenly all the visual aspects disappear for the most part. And all you see is kind of a sparkling gray void state. And so all around you is kind of nothing but this sparkling gray. What's interesting, if you wait and occupy your mind during that time, or maybe have your left hand grab your right hand to maintain a kinesthetic sensation, if you wait long enough in this void state, you'll start to see a dream begin to reappear around you. A new lucid dream will eventually start to pop up around you. Like bushes might pop up, then all of a sudden a grass, then you see a house far away and a church over there. And it's quite amazing to watch the birth of a dream. But what's interesting too about this void state, it's something that all lucid dreamers experience all around the world without any regard to culture or status or training or education. And so it makes you wonder why exactly does that state appear? And what does that have to do with lucid dreaming? Is lucid dreaming a different dimension of actuality, of experienced actuality, or is there something more going on here?
You mentioned in your talk as well about, is that the ideal to get to is to consistently examine your environment.
Right. What I'm trying to get to here is the secret to lucid dreaming, if there is a secret that I've discovered so far, is what I call developing a lucid mindset. And so this is a waking practice that'll carry over into the dream state and help you become lucidly aware. So to develop a lucid mindset means a persistent daytime habit of examining all perceived realities, all perceived experiences, or examining your mental state. And so, for example, a woman who I ran into who had lucid dreams all the time told me that she had a neurotic habit that helped her. She would constantly ask herself 20 times a day, what was I just doing? What was I just doing? And then she'd have to remember. So what would happen in the dream, she'd be doing something, and then she'd ask herself, what was I just doing? And she remembered, oh yeah, I was putting on my pajamas. This must be a dream. So she had become lucid at that point. So she had this mental mindset of examining her mind, of what had been active in her mind. But you can also do it as well by, during the day, asking yourself, how is it that I'm experiencing this? If you're a person who believes in the law of attraction, for example, you know, what attracted this event to me? Why did I see that cab driver argue with that young man? Why did I see that guy on that bicycle almost hit a woman? You know, what's attracting these events to me? Then what will happen in the dream state, you'll be going along and you'll see something strange and you'll say, why did I attract that to my experience? And then you realize, oh, this is a dream. That was just too strange. And you'll become lucidly aware. So developing a lucid mindset, I think, is at the fundamental base of what they teach these people in the dream yoga monastery, which is looking at all the world as a dream. Not that it's not important, but as a mental creation. When you begin to look at the world as a mental creation, then it's much easier to see that the dream is also a mental creation, is a product of the conscious and unconscious minds.
What about dealing with negative core beliefs? Cognitive behavior therapy and the ABC model traditionally, you know, gets in there to understand what your negative core beliefs are from an activating event, and then you work to reconstitute that.
Right. You know, one of the beautiful things about lucid dreaming that most beginners do not understand is that in virtually all lucid dreams, you're being taught a lesson if you're wise enough to understand it. Oftentimes at the very beginning, you'll see habitual behaviors, and you'll see that you'll never go further in lucid dreaming until you let go of these habitual behaviors. And it's a lovely way of getting therapy on an inner level, and it's not difficult or hard. But after the 20th lucid dream of the same habitual behavior, finally you yourself are tired of the habit, and you're ready to let it go and be free of it. So that's one example. But also, lucid dreaming shows us limiting beliefs that we might have, or also projects outward from us possibly negative ideations or non-constructive ideations. In my dream classes, when I work with people and I say, okay, let's say you become lucidly aware, and then all of a sudden a menacing dog appears that's snarling at you and its teeth are bared. What I would suggest as a lucid dreamer, at that point you can do much of anything. You can do all sorts of things. You could have a magical hammer appear and smash the dog, or you could fly away and ignore the dog. You could do all those kind of things. But what I tell people is, what I would suggest that you do is project love and compassion and understanding onto that feeling of aggression or negativity, and then watch what happens. Normally, the dog will suddenly transform into, you know, a little poodle or something like that, or something very lovable and warm. But you have to, on a lucid level, realize that your response to situations matters, and your response to that situation fundamentally is going to win the day. But of course, you can run away, and you'll have another lucid dream. Something aggressive, negative will be presented to you. You can run away again and again. But after 20 or 30 times, you finally realize this is silly. This is a game that I'm not winning. And then you come to a new response, which is, oh, I can project love and compassion, and I'll finally get beyond this.
That's wonderful, Robert. Thank you very much for that. We're just about to join another workshop. But just for the listeners who might want to contact you, how can they do it? And maybe something about your radio show? Is that available on the web?
Right. So you can read about my book, where these ideas are expressed in much greater detail, at lucidadvice.com is my book's website. Also, I produce a magazine called Lucid Dreaming Experience, which you can find at luciddreammagazine.com and read like the past 3 years of issues. But in all of this, what I'm trying to say about lucid dreaming, it's an incredible journey of depth and experience as we explore our own psyche, and also, to a large degree, explore what I feel is the true nature of reality.
Thank you very much.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You've been listening to an interview with Robert Wagner. For more podcasts, please visit noelbell.net/podcasts.